Good morning, everybody. Today is the 27th of August, 2013, and we're reaching the last stanza, the seventh race stanza of the Blessed Ones. This is Blessed Ones webinar commentary, number 9, and we're on page 39 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. So much of real depth is given in this book. That which far transcends our expectations, at least as I have returned to this book over a period of about 40 years, I've always found greater and greater depths of information and of wisdom conveyed that I little suspected when I first read. I read in a way that revealed to me something general about the rays, but not that the qualities of the monadic ray were being revealed, or that the qualities of soul fusion were being revealed, which we will discuss shortly when we look at the stanzas for the Angel of the Presence. The Angel of the Presence is a difficult term, really. In one way, one can call the solar angel the Angel of the Presence, but in another way, it is the ego on the higher mental plane within the causal body, substanded by the solar angel. That is one way to conceive of the Angel of the Presence, as that which pertains directly to the monad and is the shadow of the monad, which the solar angel certainly is not. The solar angel is its own entity. It comes from a previous Mahamanvantara. It has its own monad, though all monads are one. I always have to add that qualifier, though all monads are one. And it is in no way the shadow of the human monad, but the egoic structure in a way is, or sometimes the word reflection is used. But I think shadow is used in this context to explain that the presence cannot really penetrate the egoic lotus until the egoic lotus really must be dissipated before the presence can be more fully experienced. So there is a shadow is a less articulated field than a reflection. A reflection, in a reflection you can see all the parts of that of which it is the reflection, but with the shadow, not so, just the vague and general outline. So it tells something about the degree to which the egoic lotus, even though substanded by the a portion of the solar angel or a stream of energy from the solar angel, how that egoic lotus really cannot fully express in any way the monadic structure. Although there is a sense in which the triplicity of the monad, will, wisdom, and intelligence, or will, wisdom, and activity, is in fact reflected in the egoic lotus just as it is reflected in the spiritual triad. So this divine triplicity works its way all the way down and into the personality as well. So you have a kind of 12-foldness, the threefoldness of the monad, which ultimately I think is kind of a 12-foldness. There's a hidden structure there, probably of 12, the 12 points of blue. Then there's the triple triad and the threefold soul with its three tiers of petals and its three constituents, namely the jewel and the lotus, the petals themselves, and the members of the atomic triangle. So that's a triplicity. And then we descend into the personality itself, which has its three vehicles, mental, emotional, and etheric, physical, if we count the last two together. Well, let's get into this final stanza and see how we may offer some interpretations. Obviously, you will have your own interpretations, and they may correlate with what I suggest, or they may not, and even what I suggest may change as I study more thoroughly. I don't pretend to give the final and authoritative interpretation of any of this. This is all a work in progress, and that's really the way I feel about all of these commentaries. They are a work in progress. I am revealing what I can at my present level of knowledge or of ignorance, hoping that it will stimulate thought which can lead to revelation. That is my hope. The Blessed One sought the pathway into forms, but held with firmness to the hand of the magician. He sought to reconcile the pilgrim, who was himself, to life in form. He sought to bring the world of disorder in which he found himself into some kind of order. He wandered far into the deepest depths and became immersed in chaos and disorder. He could not understand, yet still held to the hand of the magician. He sought to bring about that order that his soul craved. He talked with all he met, but his bewilderment increased. To the magician thus he spoke, "The ways of the Creator must be good. Behind all that which seems to be must be a plan. Teach me the purpose of it all. How can I work immersed in deepest matter? Tell me the thing that I must do." The magician said, "Listen, O worker in the furthest world, to the rhythm of the times. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. Retire into the silence and attune yourself unto the whole. Then venture forth. Establish the right rhythm. Bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity." For this Blessed One, release is found in work. He must display his knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words which will evoke the builders of the forms and thus create the new. So then, let us see what thoughts come to mind. The Blessed One, we realize, comes in two forms. One form remains at home on the higher mental plane. And the other is the emanation of the one who remains at home, or the emanation of the monad on its own plane. And it is the central life as a jewel descending into the higher mental plane, where the jewel and the lotus, or the petals of the lotus, are constructed around it, and descending also by a certain path into the personal worlds. And if you look at the map, one of the maps anyway, you will see that the jewel in the lotus is connected with the mental unit. And although this gap remains and has to be built, the antikarana, it is certainly possible in the descent of the monad that it can come through the mental unit, the astral permanent atom, and the physical permanent atom. There comes a time when the monad in-metalizes, and at that time, of course, there is no mental unit. So we have to assume that there is an appropriation of these lower permanent atoms by the monad, and this is before, interestingly enough, before the egoic lotus exists. So the monad necessarily must appropriate these lower points of magnetism and building and concentration before there is such a structure as this. But for now, we're speaking of the human being, and the monadic influence can come directly through the atomic triangle here. And also, this central life will have its definite effect upon all of these petals which are unfolding, and from the petals which are unfolding we see that there are connections with the chakric structure of the human being, both etheric, we might call it etheric emotional, and mental etheric. Okay. So the Blessed One sought the pathway into forms. This is the, let's call it the path of monadic descent. But always there is this bridging function with the seventh ray type, but held with firmness to the hand of the magician, and we have to wonder then, who is the magician? So, as we've seen in the tarot card representation, there's a one hand above, one hand below. One is holding to its to a source of power and guidance, and one is becoming a source of power and guidance to an entity which is on a lower turn of the spiral. This the seventh ray type is doing, creating in as himself as a bridge between heaven and earth. Heaven is in the upper hand, where he lifts one hand into the blue of heaven and plunges deep the other into the world of forms. So he is as a bridge. And who shall be the magician? Let us say that it is not the planetary logos himself, but is that part of the monad which has remained on its own plane. So in a way, the monad is dual. One aspect of it remains ever in its whole, in its high world, appreciating and understanding with full awareness all that can be grasped on that high plane, and the other is the emanation. It's also the monad, it's also the Blessed One, and it is going down into the, let's call it the five worlds of human and superhuman evolution. And the other part, let's see, the emanation goes forth into the five worlds of human and superhuman evolution. So, and it is the characteristic of the seventh ray to be firm and secure. To be firm, to be secure in its grip. Even in the lower worlds, when you hire someone to be your security manager, it's best to hire a seventh ray type that looks after all the details and makes sure that the locks are in place when they have to be and that the doors are closed when they have to be, and that things are well fortified. So there's no sense of losing the contact with this higher understanding of magic. And by magic we can mean here the tendency to descend from above to bring a particular pattern into manifestation. All of the magical process is part of bringing heaven to earth. The heavenly patterns must appear on earth, and they do so by this willful, mental, well-ordered process that we call magic. So, in a way, the Blessed One remains connected to that part of himself on the higher plane, on the monadic plane, which continues to be aware, continues to know, and does not suffer a diminution of consciousness. That is the fate of every emanated, of every emanation. It suffers a diminution of consciousness. So the magician does not suffer a diminution of consciousness as the emanation, as its emanation always does. We are ourselves emanations. We are emanations of what we are on the higher planes, and we have suffered a great diminution of consciousness. We have been plunged, even though we are the essential being consciousness, the essential monad, we have been plunged into great ignorance because we cannot, the worlds around us prevent, at first, that which we are on the higher planes from coming through. We have to bring ourselves through. We have to bring our heavenly self into our earthly self, so that within the earthly self, the nature of the heavenly self can not only be appreciated, but can be expressed. And a much fuller consciousness can reign below than was possible at first. Here's another one of those important sentences which we have to apply to all of these stanzas and to all the ray types. He sought to reconcile the pilgrim who was himself to life and form. Well, there's that word pilgrim. The monadic journey is a pilgrimage. And the monad which goes forth in emanation is the pilgrim. And this was, I think, maybe discussed a little bit earlier. The term pilgrim was also used here. Let's see if I can just find this. Pilgrim. Well, there's 12 references to it. Therefore, be full of joy, O pilgrim on the way. So, O monad on the way. Every time you see the word pilgrim, you might as well think of the word monad. We're not just talking about the one who reawakens to what he is and is going on a pilgrimage to find himself. That's only part of the cycle. The pilgrim has to go forth. The answer comes, order from chaos, O pilgrim on the way of death. This is the emanated monad going forth on the first ray. Here's another one. Tread thou, O pilgrim, the way of O pilgrim on the way of sensuous life, the middle-lighted way. And again, this is in the sixth ray stanza for the sixth ray monad. And now we have ray seven, the pilgrim again. And it definitely says, well, the best blessed one is the pilgrim. There's no question about that. In this statement, we see that the Blessed One is definitely, definitely the pilgrim. The one who has gone forth on a great journey, maybe a 25 million year journey, you know, that's just a rounded figure. The way I kind of get it is if you think about the people who were individualized here on our planet, and that was 21 million years ago, and you think about where most of them are, there may be, for many of them, some millions of years ahead before they can become a true master. It's a rounded figure, but you know it is a figure that seems to be associated, at least according to Stephen Pugh, with the number four. And the number four is the number of the human kingdom and the human creative hierarchy, so maybe it has something to do with the span of evolution for members of that kingdom. Maybe it is a 25 million year span, but of course subject to great variation depending upon the exertion of the will of the individual members. So he sought to reconcile the pilgrim who was himself and and was used to the expansive monadic life on the monadic plane to life in form. And life in form relates especially to the lower 18 subplanes, but does not exclude the life in the egoic lotus, which is still in the dense physical body of the solar logos, although not of the planetary logos. At least that's how I've conceived it. Everything seems to move down a few subplanes when you come to the planetary logos. As I've often said, it seems easier sometimes to catch the analogies between man and the solar logos than between man and the planetary logos. Sometimes when certain beings are closer to us, their nature is more blinded. When the path to Sirius, for instance, is closer to us, its nature, as it is presented to us, is more blinded than some of the other paths. And DK says not much can be said about it, although he does manage to say quite a bit, I think. He sought to bring the world of disorder. See, there's a connection of the seventh ray, the seventh ray is connected with archetypes, with standing, with abiding patterns in heaven. And these archetypes are in, well, relatively perfect order. They have what we might call an exact arrangement. And this is also called the ray of exact arrangement, the seventh ray. So the big thing for all of us, but especially for the seventh ray type, is to see the archetype reflected in the lower worlds, repatterning the energies and forces of the lower worlds. So bringing order into the lower worlds, is the repatterning of the energies and forces of the lower worlds according to the nature of the archetype. Repatterning. Okay, that's sometimes they want you to put a hyphen in there. So he sought then to bring the world of disorder, the mosaic, the chaotic mosaic world, we'll call it that, the chaotic mosaic world, you know, where you build images out of fragments. That's what mosaics are, and all of the atomic constituents of the planes are, as it were, fragments. So we're trying to build this seamless archetype out of fragments. There's quite a difference when you see the original the original source and then the fragmented image of that source. I keep on thinking of some kind of image in mosaics of the Emperor Constantine. Of course, the emperor existed as he was. He was not fragmented. You could see a seamless image there, but then as it was laid out in mosaics, it was all parts and pieces. As you step back farther, however, the fragmented nature seems to disappear, and from a distance you seem to see a more seamless representation of the archetype. So anyway, before the really rational purpose descends, we have, relative to what is intended, a great disorder in the lower world. So he found himself, you know, on the, let's say, on the lower 18 subplanes, and here he is wandering. And, you know, at first it can't be perfect order, but at least an approximation of order. He seeks to bring that world of disorder in which he found himself into some kind of order, at least an approximation of the higher order, which he inwardly senses, because he has not let go of the hand of the magician. So he's kept his connection to the archetypes. And this we know of seventh ray types. They are ever trying to bring into some kind of reasonable, orderly relationship the general chaos of energy and force actions and reactions in which they find themselves immersed. It's kind of the effect of the seventh ray upon the third. The very densest worlds are ruled by the third ray from the solar logoic point of view. We can even say that the lower 21 planes are, in a sense, ruled by the third ray from the solar logoic perspective, and the higher 28 subplanes are ruled by the seventh ray, by Uranus and have within them the presence of the organizing archetypes, which are to be impressed upon the lower worlds. So at least into some kind of order. He is the monad, but he's been sent forth from the soul. The unit of being consciousness is sent forth, really, from the soul. The soul is an intermediary with respect to the monad. But the consciousness, whatever it is always monadic consciousness. There really is nothing else, and every other kind of consciousness that we describe is really a variety or a qualification of monadic awareness. So all the other kinds of consciousness are what we would call attenuated, variously attenuated monadic awareness. In the other kinds of consciousness, we have variously attenuated monadic awareness. Okay. Or maybe what I should be saying here is we have variously attenuated types of monadic awareness. We differentiate the different aspects of soul, but in my view, all soul is monadic soul, meaning all consciousness is the consciousness of one being, who is the universal monad. So he wandered far into the deepest depths, and the deepest depths, we could say, this is the densest part of the dense physical body of the solar logos, planetary logos. So he's down particularly in the furthest world. The deepest depths are the what's called furthest world, which is the etheric physical plane systemically considered. He wandered, which really means, you know, he didn't exactly know where he was going, what was his goal or destination. He simply went along into these lower planes and subplanes until he found himself upon the densest level of the etheric physical plane, systemically considered, and that's the three lowest worlds of density. So we're working right here. We're within the ethers, but we seem to perceive all that is solid and tangible. So he wandered into material tangibility, we might say, into material tangibility. Also, having a connection with the ethers, of course, and the astral and the mental as well. But he is the worker in the furthest world, as we will see in a moment. He wandered far into the deepest depths and became immersed in chaos and disorder. And generally, you know, when the 7th-ray types look at chaos and disorder, they like it not. So this was all around him, swirled. Swirled the unregulated energies and forces. He could not understand, in other words, no pattern, no real understanding of the pattern which was to emerge within chaos was yet his. But it would be, of course. In other words, he has the potential because he's holding with firmness to the hand of the magician, which means at least access to the magician is available. Though this would come later, after the reorientation. In the beginning, of course, the seventh-ray type, like every other type, has to be in ignorance in the lower worlds and forgetful of his origin and having to do the best he can with the inner promptings which come ultimately from his high source, but it's a source that he cannot contact directly until he's really reoriented. First, he contacts that source as a soul, which is a reflection, or perhaps a shadow, a reflection of his true higher source, and then he contacts that true higher source, or monad, or Father in Heaven, directly, just as the Christ did. But first, we are doing well to contact the intermediary, which is substanded by the solar angel with all of its wisdom. We're contacting our higher nature, which simply knows more and which we can consult. So he's immersed in chaos and disorder, and he cannot understand because the, I'll call it this, the sponsoring archetype is not yet clear to him. What the lower world is meant to be, according to the divine plan, is not yet clear to him. Yet still held to the hand of the magician. So he is aware that he is suspended from a higher source. And this becomes more and more obvious as he begins his reorientation. See, so much is covered in so few words here that we have the entire involutionary descent of the monad in a way. Let's just say the monad is there at individualization, you know. We're not really talking about the stages of in metallization, in vegetalization, and in zoonation, but from the time that the human being exists, the monad has been in a way present and has sponsored, with the help of the solar angel, this individualization process. So the monad is present in everything that happens. There is only one consciousness, and that one consciousness ultimately belongs to the higher worlds. So the monad is present in all of this early wandering about in chaos and confusion. And there is a growing sense, I would say, this would manifest, this holding to the hand of the magician, this holding, let's try to get that correct, this holding would manifest as a growing sense of the possibility of inner guidance from a high source to which the Blessed One in the lower worlds is connected. He doesn't realize how blessed he is until there's a long, the path of return has been trodden. But nonetheless, even in the lower worlds, he is the Blessed One. All of us are the Blessed One, although we have not realized our beatific nature because we have not risen into fields of substance which are less dense and in which our inner nature can make itself known and manifest. The real key, of course, is to make one's inner nature manifest even in these very low and dense worlds. And we gain the power to do that as we allow the downflow of the higher life to come into our consciousness. It's still held to the hand of the magician. So he's always connected. The highest and the lowest meet, you know. The seventh ray is the bridge between opposites, a relational bridge between opposites. It's the ray by which heaven comes to earth. So one hand is in the blue of heaven and the other is in the world of forms. He sought to bring about that order that his soul craved. Well, let's just say that soul is simply consciousness. So we're saying that his consciousness craved. And of course, before he can discover his true origin and source, he has to discover the intermediate position of soul, which represents his true origin or source. So the soul on the higher mental plane represents the monad, which is his true origin and source. And this is interesting. He talked with all he met. This is kind of a description, I think, of the seventh ray type. He's outwardly oriented, and he's seeking advice everywhere. He's looking impartially for the many different opinions. And I've seen seventh ray people. They have this the social ability to speak with anyone and to speak in polite and acceptable and agreeable, non-offending terms. But he is, let's just say, he's inquiring without rather than within, as is the tendency for all the bewildered monads at first, the bewildered monads in extension. So he is seeking advice and orientation without, rather than within himself, you know, his higher sources. But it's always natural to be extroverted before one becomes spiritually introverted. It's always natural to look for the answers, even the word natural suggests it, to look for answers in our obvious consciousness rather than to go into one's closet and, you know, or pull down the veil or pull down the shades and retire within and find out what may be the true internal directive, the better type of advice which rightly orients one. So he talked with all he met quite successfully, I suppose, but he still felt lost among the trees of the forest. That's what it means to be bewildered, to be out in the wild and to be lost. Out in the wild, which is the elemental life, and lost. So the many in the lower worlds cannot answer him, cannot reorient him. And sometimes I've used the word orientation for the integration formulas of the seventh ray, to be rightly oriented to the Son of Life, to the inner magician, to the soul considered as the white magician. Now that's a point, of course. The soul is the real white magician. MGN. The soul is the real white magician, and the monad even more when we are considering the seventh ray monad. Okay. That's second, and let's see, seventh ray, okay, seventh ray monad. Well, I think I want to make a little bit of a abbreviation there. S-V-N, so we'll do S-V-F-R monad, okay. So this will be the seventh ray monad. We could have doubted that such things really exist, but they do. And there's a lot more in occultism than we may fathom. DK can't give it all to us at once, or we become, as he says, hopelessly confused. But we can piece it all together as we work over the years with his material, and the many facts which he offers will come into relationship with each other via the planet Mercury. So he talked with all he met, but he became more and more confused, and then what? Well, here comes again the state of consideration, the state of inward consultation, as in every case. You know, he questioned within himself. He, what did he do? You know, let's look at these stages of inward consultation. So here he, to the magician thus he spoke. That's the seventh ray method. The sixth ray method, he spoke at last within himself. He's gone, he's consulted now something higher within himself. He asked himself. This is the fifth ray method. The Blessed One paused and questioned. He ceased from the conflict for a moment and questioned within. The third ray type, I don't know if it's there in the same way. The thought reached forth. Well, something inward is going on there. And he is speaking within himself, we could say. The second ray type, his voice was heard. At least he is meditating, we will say, and he's reflecting. At least this is a reflection. Because when he says, I have built and strongly built, but I'm a prisoner in my building, that is a reflection. He's pausing. And he asserts, that is the parallel phrase. For each of the three rays of aspect, the stage of self consultation is a little less accurately defined, or at least specifically defined, a little less specifically defined, but in this assertion, in the hearing of the voice, in the thought that reached forth, this is the self-consultation. In other words, it's a reorientation that is needed. One is operating a certain way in the lower worlds, and that method of operation just is not working and is causing a great friction between what the monad in extension thinks it is or feels itself to be and what the outer life in the three worlds is, or the way that outer life is experienced. All right, so now this is the inner self-consultation. To the magician thus he spoke. Now, to whom is he speaking? Well, he can speak to the soul as the extension of the monad in extension, and that is at first, and later, when truly homing in, we might say, I think that's a good way to describe the return to the monad, to return to the monad on its own plane. When he's truly homing in, the magician can be the monad itself. So always, let's just say, in general, the magician is a higher source with which there can be spiritually profitable consultation. Who do we consult? I mean, you know, there are many consultants out there. And what do they say? Knowledge resides in the mind of those attentive to the thoughts of others. Wisdom in the mind of those attentive to their own thoughts. So the ways of the Creator must be good. Okay, this is the Creator, in this case, is the planetary logos. The ways of the Creator must be good. Behind all that which seems to be, must be a plan. In other words, what's he saying? There must be an inner order behind all this apparent chaos and confusion. And it's because he is linked to the magician, whether that magician be the soul representing the monad or the monad itself, he's linked, and so he has that inner sense, that inner conviction that there is a plan behind it all, an order behind it all, because the link which he has maintained makes that impression upon his consciousness, because in a way the order of the higher worlds is unconscious within him, but latent and accessible. With the law of repulse, you know, the magnet vast is oscillating overhead, and there is a room of ordered beauty behind him, but he doesn't sense it. He begins to sense it, but he doesn't see it yet. And as he begins to sense it, he revolves within the arch and turns the other way. So all of these stanzas are related to each other. They have to do, I think, with the different stages of development and integration. And here, you know, we're dealing with the entire pilgrimage. When we look at the Blessed Ones, we're dealing with the involutionary going forth. When I say involutionary, I mean, you know, the descent of the attenuated monadic consciousness into the lower worlds. And this is to gain experience and to work in these lower worlds. And then the reorientation and the return to the soul and monad. It's the entire thing. And some of the other stanzas and old commentary sections just deal with a particular segment of the process, like the integration formulas deal with the specifically with the phase of integration, personality integration, and integration with the soul. There are fusion formulas, but there are not fusion paragraphs. And when we're dealing with the solar angel, the angel of the presence paragraphs, we are dealing actually with fairly completed soul infusion. So maybe the fusion formulas, which are, you know, isolated unity and inclusive reason and presented attributes, maybe they should be correlated with the fusion of the solar angel or the angel of the presence with the personality in these angel of the presence stanzas which are coming up after this. So the ways of the, there's this intuition from holding firm to the hand of the magician that the ways of the creator must be good and, you know, must be orderly. when the seventh ray says this, order is implied. And order is simply, in this case, simply a right relationship. Right relationship of the constituents. So rather than a jumble and a mess and a chaos, they are properly, almost geometrically related. We're told that God geometrizes, the second ray is the grand geometrician, and the seventh ray has much to do with the manipulation of chaos into geometrical order. Behind all that which seems to be, which is, and the seems to be, this is a chaos, must be an orderly plan. Teach me the purpose of it all. Teach me, you who are in the higher worlds, and know, in other words, let the part of me that knows teach the part of me that has forgotten. All of us, in our essential essence, we do know all things. We are the one monad, but the key is how to bring the fullness of the higher state and the awareness of the higher field into the attenuated consciousness of the emanation. This is the task, and can that ever be completely done? I don't know. Maybe one day, as it were, God is all in all, and Sanat Kumara walks the earth through all of us in full Shambhalic consciousness. Maybe it is so. Teach me the purpose of it all, and another way of saying that is to teach me the archetype of it all, the standing wave, the relationship in heaven between all factors. How can I work? Which is always the question. How can I work? You know, and it comes to him in the integration formula, love not the work, but love the plan rather. But this is the worker. Let's just say that the seventh ray type is the worker. If you look for epitomes for these different types, the seventh ray type is the magician, of course, but on a lower turn of the spiral, the worker, and we always talk about the magical work. So far from home, far from the monad, almost banished to the outer world, immersed in deepest matter, how can I work? And this is kind of interesting. The seventh ray has a connection with obedience. And does not so much evolve the directives from within itself as does the first ray, first ray type. So we can say that the seventh ray type is often seeking to be guided by a higher authority which tells most explicitly the thing to be done, whereas the first ray type evolves from within itself the thing that is to be done, or at least apprehends the idea and then puts it forth as its own. But eventually the seventh ray type does become the first ray type, at least in the soul transitions that is the case. Although I have wondered whether the seventh ray type cannot become any one of the ray of aspect types. There was an example in the Dyna books about a transition from the seventh ray soul to the second, very unexpected, but still that is what happened, and Master R took with him onto the third ray when he became the Mahachohan, many of his initiates of the second, I think the third degree, so they transferred from the seventh to the third, and of course the natural transfer is from the seven to the one. There's a kind of balancing in the seventh ray whereby all the rays of aspect are considered important in coming together to make what the seventh ray is. There's kind of a numerological progression there. We have to know how we can reach numbers 4, 5, 6, 7 from combinations of 1, 2, and 3. And in the Cosmic Fire Book, he tells us how to reach the numbers 1 through 12 from the 7. And I have that somewhere, and I once followed it out. You know, it looks a little bit complicated, but when you see what he's done with combinations and permutations, you see how the 7 do become the 12. He didn't do that for the 3 becoming the 7, but he gave enough hints concerning the combinations so we can pretty well do it for ourselves. How can I work? Immersed in deepest matter, tell me the thing that I must do. So there's this, still this outward orientation. Well, in a way, of course, it's an inward orientation, but it's I will listen and obey is the motto. So, you know, and you kind of think about the devas and their connection with the seventh ray and how they are the army of the voice. The devas obey the voice. Obey the commanding voice. Voice and the word. So there's a waiting to be directed here. The seventh ray type and the Deva kingdom related to it waits for the word. Give me the word, you know. Waits for the word and then goes into action. So give me the word, which is like what's called the go-ahead. Of course, it's more than that, because there is a shaping of the Deva kingdom. It goes into certain forms according to the form of the word. But basically, they respond to the word, and before the word is given, they do not respond. But the magician says, or said, and we can say, you know, whether this this magician is the soul or the monad, even if it is the soul, it is the monad, because the soul is simply a vehicle for the monad, and the real life and consciousness is that of the monad always. The magician said, listen. Now this is interesting, because again we have the reflection of the army of the voice. We remember the army of the voice, which listens. And the seventh ray is connected with the sense of hearing, because hearing is found on the lowest of the planes. And in the lower worlds, of course, it's found on the fifth plane, both astrally and etheric physically. But on the other and higher planes, it's found on the seventh plane. Anyway, it's always the lowest and first of the senses to develop. So there is a connection with the ears, particularly for the seventh ray, and awaiting the word. So let's just say that the seventh ray, and awaiting the word, listens. Listen, O worker in the furthest world. And that is on the etheric physical plane, systemically considered, and even immersed in the dense physical world, to the rhythm of the times. So again, study the cycles. And both the third ray type and the seventh ray are proficient in the study of the cycles. One thinks of Aquarius as a sign constellation which is particularly associated with the knowledge of cycles, and the seventh ray through Uranus is much connected with Aquarius, and the third ray as well through Saturn, and also perhaps constellationally transmitted. I'm not sure that the seventh ray is constellationally transmitted through Aquarius, but certainly Aquarius does rule the lowest or the seventh manifested creative hierarchy. The numerical resonance is there. So there you are, out in the etheric physical world, and especially in the physical world, and listen to the cycles as they are impinging upon the planet and upon humanity at this time. These are actually fairly occult injunctions or pieces of advice. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. So, well, you know, this is interestingly enough, the divine is the monad, and the planetary logos is the monad for the planet as a whole. The soul is spiritual, and maybe we can call it divine, but there is a higher rhythm of the divine sources, a higher rhythm of the divine sources, and the pulsations of the heart in a higher sense control all other rhythms. So the basic pulsation of the spirit aspect is at the root of all the other rhythms. We might say all the other cycles are kind of combinations of that basic basic pulsation. So, you know, find the heart, he's being told. Find the heart which times all, which sets the measure of action, action in the lower worlds. So we have to know the speed with which things are to be, the inner purposes to be manifested, the inner plan, the speed and the timing of the manifestation, and the heart is keeping, the pulsation of the heart is keeping all alive and in coherence. The pulsation of this higher heart is keeping all alive and in the state of coherence. So if there's going to be a departure from a chaotic impulse, one has to attend to the organizing principles. So he's being told, well, how about spelling that? To attend, or to listen, attend to the organizing principles, the cycles, and the heartbeat of divinity, which determines the basic, well, let's say drumbeat, the basic drumbeat of evolution, evolutionary unfoldment. Now, if the heart is beating very, very fast, then the rhythm will have to be speedy. So, in other words, correlate with the life-giving rhythmic source. Correlate your action with that basic beat. He's being told to do this. So correlate your action in the lower worlds with that basic beat of the life-giving heart. And maybe we could say that with our planetary logos, it is the love aspect which is to be brought forward. And it is to be brought forward in a certain rhythm. It can't be all at once. So the rhythm of the approach of the heart energy has to be sensed, and the forms have to be prepared so that they can bear and absorb and sustain that forthcoming life and love energy of the heart. He's told to meditate. And instead of listening to the outer voices, right? So instead of talking with all he met, rather to meditate in silence, and to attune yourself unto the wholeness of the planetary life in this case. Wholeness of the planetary life. So somehow let the rhythms within this wholeness be understood. Let that be your objective. So be not out of synchronization with the rhythms of the planetary whole. We'll call it that, planetary whole. So what is it that's needed for the greatest good of the greatest number? What's needed in terms of the wholeness? How is the planet itself seeking to move? How is the Logos moving through his creation rather than just through one or other phase of his creation? What are the rhythms of the whole, and what part can I play in bringing forward the right imposition of those rhythms, the right establishment of those rhythms in the outer world? Then, knowing the inner rhythms and the basic beat of the all-sustaining planetary heart, only then go forth to work, then venture forth. And then in the outer worlds, knowing the inner rhythm, we can say, knowing the inner rhythms, establish the right rhythm outwardly. But only when you're, you know, when you're sure of what it is meant to be. There are many seventh-rate types that without knowing really the inner divine intention and the inner organization to be established through right archetypal rhythm. They just go out there and they create an order according to their own desire, to their own mind, according to what they think is best, without truly being guided by a purpose, an understanding of planetary purpose by the archetypal pattern. So it is possible to establish order, all right, but these orders will have to be broken up later as the intended planetary order impinges upon the wrongly created order, or the creation of the wrong order. So establish the right rhythm, outwardly bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity. Order within the kingdoms and within the creations which humanity puts forth, because human beings are forms of life which must express the plan of deity, but also the creations of human beings are to be used in expressing the plan of deity, and so many are unconscious creations. So help humanity to become a conscious and plan attentive creator. So much of what we create is because of what we want to create. We desire certain things, and we have the power to bring form and substance together. We have the power to bring the energies together, and we can create as we wish. But what we have to do is learn to create as God, the planetary logos, wills, or as the soul within us, or the monad within us, which is part of that planetary logos, gives us, advises us, and helps us understand that higher type of creativity. Bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity. So in that spiritual order, in that order reflective of divinity, the plans of deity can work out with less confusion, with greater clarity, with greater effectiveness. But one really has to have the inner archetype, the inner blueprint. One has to be impressed by the inner archetype, the seventh ray type, before venturing forth. Must be impressed by the inner archetype so that he can work in conformity with that archetype, and not, I'll put a capital, and not deviate. And then comes the summation. For this blessed one, release from the lower worlds. You know, the monad always seeks release. The monad always seeks to return to its full divine nature. And the word release is oftentimes used here. We're talking about the release of the Blessed One deep hidden in the Ark, and here release is found in work, and for the first ray type, there is a... Oh, I've gone a little too far here. Yeah, here it is. We'll release the hidden Blessed One in order, bring, and so forth. Here's release from the Ark. Here's release from the maze of earth existence. Victory is like release for the fourth ray type. For the fifth ray type, passing through into the light sublime is a form of release. And for the entering into the light of joy of proved success for the sixth ray type is a form of release. Sometimes the word release is specifically used, and sometimes not. Okay, so let's look at this. For this blessed one, release is found in work. Remember, the seventh ray type is the worker. is the worker. And he's the worker in the furthest world, but release for him and his return. Release is return into the monad. Release is return into the higher blessed one, the monad on its own plane. He must display his knowledge of the plan, which he has gained through retiring into the silence and attuning himself unto the whole, and noting the pulsation in the heart of all, and the rhythm of the times. Now he has knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words. Again, it's in the area of the throat center, and we do have to remember that at a certain point, the throat center is ruled by the seventh ray. So then the magical words can begin to be spoken through the throat center, and one can become a true white magician. So he must sound words. The third ray and the seventh ray are both very connected with the throat center, which makes it surprising in a way that the there is no resolution of the seventh ray type onto the third ray. I always thought it would be a natural type of resolution. At least it has occurred in connection with Master R and his students. He must display his knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words, and they are definitely magical words, are they not? Okay, MG. Magical words, which will evoke the builders of the forms. So through the right words, control the Deva kingdom, who are the builders, and thus create the new. And here is the Uranian impulse. And what is the new? That which comes from the archetype is always the new. It's the old too. It's been around. You know, the purpose has been there from the very beginning, and is sustained just as it is all the way through the cycle of becoming. So in the world of being, the purpose is sustained throughout the entirety of the cycle of becoming. But when the archetype appears within the lower worlds, it is a reconditioning influence, because so much that has been built or conditioned in the lower worlds has been done in the half-light, has been done according to desire and with a limited mind at work. So always the appearance of the archetype in time and space appears to be the new. It's not really spiritually and in the world of being the new, but it is a new condition which reflects the archetype. So a new condition which reflects the archetype. This is what we are seeking. And it's the Uranian urge, and there I've sometimes, well, you know, there are many ways to look at the seventh ray, and probably there are seven different varieties, but there is a Uranian approach to the seventh ray. It's probably more on the first ray line. A Jupiterian approach to the seventh ray, it's a planet with much seventh ray in it, probably more on the second ray line. And the Saturnian approach, which is more on the third ray line, and has to do with the conditions which oftentimes are not reflective of the plan and have to be broken up by the Uranian impulse. Okay, so these are some thoughts, and I think what we can do, the best thing for us to do then, is to read this stanza. I know I'm a little over, but I'm trying to keep these commentaries together when they are on a particular ray, as it seems that would be the best way to study. Okay. Ray 7. The Blessed One sought the pathway into forms, but held with firmness to the hand of the magician. And of course, there's kind of a sutratma there, isn't there? There is a path of descent from the highest to the lowest, and that pathway, and I think I should somehow say that. I guess maybe I'll kind of reanalyze it at this moment. The pathway, which is sutratma. Okay, sutatma. And interesting, you know, it's coming from a very high source, is the life thread. He sought the pathway into forms, but held with firmness to the hand of the magician. And in this case, the magician, let us say, is the monad on its own plane. It's the true nature of what the Blessed One is. It's a higher Blessed One. It is having full powers, full monadic powers, and full knowledge. And so out of the sense of security, which is so prominent with the seventh ray, he does not let go of his contact with the source from which he came. He sought to reconcile the pilgrim, the monad, who was himself, to life in form, which is very different from life in this great world of energies in Shambhala. Divine patterns of great beauty, we are told, in Shambhala, where the monad is, on his own plane, is focused. At least the second plane is one of the Shambhalic planes. He sought to bring the world of disorder in which he found himself, that is the lower, the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos, into some kind of order, at least to approximate the order of the inner worlds. He wandered without direction, far into the deepest depths, the lowest part of density, the lowest part of the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos, which are the etheric physical subplanes, systemically considered, and became immersed. He couldn't get out, immersed, trapped, steeped in chaos and disorder, the irregulation of forces. He could not understand. He was bewildered because he had lost his connection with the explanatory archetype, even though unconsciously he still sustained it because he inwardly held to the hand of the magician. He sought to bring about that order that his soul craved. His consciousness, a reflection of the higher consciousness on the monadic plane, inwardly craved order in the outer world, sought to reproduce that order. So his consciousness craved this, and in his soul nature he craves it, in his monadic awareness he craves it. The word soul is a general term here. He talked with all he met, seeking orientation from without, but still remained in a fragmented state of consciousness, overcome by the illusion of all the chaos. Well, it's really a maya, isn't it? He's overcome by chaotic maya. Sometimes those words are interchangeable, you know. Maya can refer to all kinds of glamour and illusion and maya as well, and so can glamour, and illusion can as well. They have their own specific area of application, but they can also refer to all the other, to each of the other two states as well. To the magician, to the higher part of his own nature, whether soul or monadic, thus he spoke. The ways of the Creator, the planetary logos, must be good, i.e., orderly, rational, archetypal. Behind all that which seems to be, all this chaos, must be a plan for bringing about orderly and beautiful rational results. Teach me the purpose of it all. What is the standing wave behind all of this? What is the sustained purpose, sustained from the beginning to the end? How can I, feeling very alone, work here, immersed, trapped in, steeped in the deepest level of matter? I don't know what to do. And always for the seventh ray type, it's a question of what to do. How shall I work? And then, of course, the answer comes in another one of these commentaries: love not the work, but love the plan. We'll get into that. Teach me the thing, tell me the thing that I must do, the natural obedience of the seventh ray type, following orders. You know, when you think about the defense in Nazi Germany of those who carried out the atrocity, I was only following orders. There must be a strong seventh ray there somehow. There certainly is in the Aries energy, which rules the soul of Germany. And I have a feeling that with the fifth ray mind of Germany, as I intuit it, and the, I think, seventh ray physical body, there's a lot of response to order. Plus the negativity of the Pisces, of course. The magician said, "Listen, O worker, in the furthest worlds." That's what the seventh ray type is, the worker in the furthest world, the world of the systemic etheric physical plane, and especially at this point in the physical, to the rhythm of the times, to the cycles, planetary and ray cycles, as they are impinging upon humanity and the kingdoms and the earth in general. So We have to see what, attune what energies are coming in, what energies are going out, what do I have to work with. Form, activity, substance, and desire, these are the materials of the seventh ray type we learn in that integration formula. How can I work with these forms at the right time and in the right rhythm? And sense the coming and going of energy as you listen. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. It's the heartbeat of the soul, but even more the heartbeat of the spirit, and ultimately the heartbeat of the planetary logos as he determines the rhythm by which the divine worlds are to manifest in the lower worlds. We cannot violate that rhythm because that is his purpose, and the rhythm of externalization will depend upon this inner pulsation. We could really call it the planetary heart, even. I mean, there is reason to believe, there is going to be a planetary etheric heart center. Is it found on the Buddhic plane? Some references would make one think so. Is it found possibly on the monadic plane as the solo-logoic heart center, etheric heart center, may well be found? Well, we don't know for sure. That has to be put together, but there is a pulsation concerning how to, in what rhythm, to manifest the higher worlds in the lower. And now meditate, retire into the silence, consult again with your inner self, which really is the higher sources, and attune yourself not just to your own particular part, but try to see your own particular part within the context of the whole. Just be aware of what's happening planet-wide and of all the different cycles and energies which are impinging on the entire planet and trying to bring about a planetary effect. Then, and only then, venture forth to work as you love to do, but now you are informed. Establish the right rhythm in the outer worlds, a rhythm which is reflective of the rhythms you have learned about through your attunement, and bring order, right relationship, right geometrical relationship in right timing to the forms of life, which are the forms of all the kingdoms and the forms of that which man produces, which must express the plan of deity and make those forms interrelated in an efficient way, which can really receive the higher impression and the higher pattern in the way that it is intended. In other words, bring order out of chaos, because chaos is a great resistant mass of energies which will deflect the impression of the higher patterns which exist in the archetypal worlds of being. For this blessed one, release is found in work. The release of the monad back to itself, the retraction of the emanation, the homecoming, we might say. He must display his knowledge of the plan, and the seventh ray is a very knowledgeable type of ray. Just look at Master R and all the practical knowledge he has to be applied to every aspect of the earthly development. He must display his knowledge of the plan by using the throat center with which the seventh ray is associated, by the sounding of those words, magical words, Uranian words, which will evoke, call forth the devas who are the builders of the form, and call them forth in a rational and intelligent manner, and thus create the new, and the new is always the descent of the archetype into the lower worlds, appreciated as the new because not sensed or seen before. So it shows up, and there it is, even though it's ancient. It is the latest revelation, and it is new compared to the old conditions which have been. The Blessed One sought the pathway into forms, but held with firmness to the hand of the magician. He sought to reconcile the pilgrim who was himself to life in form. He sought to bring about the world, to bring the world of disorder in which he found himself into some kind of order. He wandered far into the deepest depths and became immersed in chaos and disorder. He could not understand, yet still held to the hand of the magician. He sought to bring about that order that his soul craved. He talked with all he met, but his bewilderment increased. To the magician thus he spoke, The ways of the Creator must be good. Behind all that which seems to be must be a plan. Teach me the purpose of it all. How can I work immersed in deepest matter? Tell me the thing that I must do. The magician said, Listen, O worker in the furthest world, to the rhythm of the times. Note the pulsation in the heart of that which is divine. Retire into the silence and attune yourself unto the whole. Then venture forth. Establish the right rhythm. Bring order to the forms of life which must express the plan of deity. For this blessed one, release is found in work. He must display his knowledge of the plan by the sounding of those words which will evoke the builders of the forms and thus create the new. Okay, friends, I'm certainly well over the mark. Some of these are turning out to be more like hour-and-a-half programs. But I trust you will have the patience, and let us just say that we have reached then the end of, of number 9. Okay, there we are. So we reach here the end of Blessed One's webinar commentaries 9. And we're on page 39. When you deal with old commentaries stanzas, you don't move fast because they're such a symbolic language, and the ideas are often so abstruse that you have to patiently spend time in the interpretation. From Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, and we're beginning Blessed One's webinar commentaries, page 30, commentary 10, page 39 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. Okay, then we'll see you shortly, and we'll get into some of the, there are some practical things that are coming up where DK is basically essentializing the meaning of the stanzas, and you can use those on the personal soul or even monadic level. So we'll see you shortly. Bye-bye.